Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Rack Addicts After Hours, the music and technology podcast, once again in Rack Addicts Studios, with a dog this time, so hopefully we won't have too many barking interruptions. Just Pete and Ben today to feast on your ears. No, that's not how it works. You can feast your ears on our strange voices. We've got synth news and other news. And some other more different news, and some spacey news, and some news. Anyway, what have you been up to this week, Pete?
Unfortunately, I have to report that my gas is now in full flow, if that's the right description.
You need a tablet for that.
Yes, possibly. I am literally got to the level of one module a week.
Ooh, yeah. Last week at work, you were saying, I need this. I just got a flight case for that. And then what's the list as it currently stands?
Well, the list was a whole series of Chaos devices, which we discussed last week.
For a recap, Batumi, Belgrad, Kamenyek, the phasery boy. Have you ordered that?
No, I've ordered the Belgrad today.
Yep. You were thinking about Zadar, the envelope thing. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it for Chaos Device, but there's also the DivKit module, which I...
The LFO one.
Yes, the...
Oct.
Yes, that's the one, the 8.
Really popular. I think possibly the fastest growing in popularity module I've ever seen. Obviously something from Mutable or Make Noise immediately soars to the top of Modular Grid, but that's a very impressive
one. Yes, and it seems to be very well received, as you say, and it's at a great price.
Yeah, and it's super simple, but intelligently designed just to have those musical divisions at your fingertips.
I nearly ordered that today as well, but I'm going to hang back a bit and most probably get it next week.
It's black and gold, so it will fit with the colour scheme at least.
Aesthetically, it's going to go well, but I'm more interested in the functionality. It seems to be quite an interesting...
Although with Batumi, you'll have 12 LFOs.
Well, it's a different type of LFO, isn't it? They're not...
They're less customisable, but it's to add that organic evolution throughout a whole patch, I think.
Yeah, aren't they just... sort of cycling in their own, you know, they're all going in and out of phase and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're all different rates but coupled to the same master frequency. That's how it's
so are they divisions of that frequency or
yes, but not musical ones and not nice fun numbers either. So they, as you say, they phase around and they don't line up properly for that organic feel, but in a very small module.
I would imagine that's the whole point of
exactly.
the module.
Yeah. They're cool.
So, yes, that's on the list. And then I've got a few others. I've been looking at polyphonic modules.
You've got polysynths.
I know, but in the modular scenario. So we looked at the Demon Core. We spoke about that quite a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one is currently on eBay in the UK at quite a reasonable price. In fact, I made them an offer, which was immediately refused by the automated system.
Gotcha.
But I'm keeping my eye on it. But then another one came to mind, which is the Acid Rain.
I was just going to suggest it and show it to you if you hadn't seen it. That's a really cool little one. Yeah.
And that one is also very economically priced or well priced. Mm.
Yeah, and it's tiny as well. 4 HP, I believe, for 3 separately addressable voices. Yeah, Super Saw, Super Square, and flavours in between.
And I feel that's going to be the one.
Stereo, of course, as well.
As much as I would like the Demon Core, it is a very expensive oscillator.
Yeah.
And you also then need the expander to really benefit from the
you do.
And it ends up being a £700 oscillator.
Yeah, so an extra voice and lots more money, lots more HP. I've had the, not the Super Saw, the Acid Rain Chainsaw. I've had that on my radar for a good while. It's cool. What would you pick for stereo filtering goodness on that front? Because there's one that I just saw recently, Shackmat, who do some interesting... Actually, they do some interesting quad-based stuff. Shackmat have released a new stereo filter, which is called... Is it the Jewel Dagger? No, it's newer than that. Hold on one second. Let me find where I read about that one. But yeah, they do some really interesting quad modules. There's the Aeolus Seeds, which is a quadraphonic modulation processor, and one really cool, though sort of boring looking module, which is the Aeolus Mixer. It's a quadraphonic mixer that helps you interface between stereo, quad, and you can also do 5.1 with it in about 6 HP, so that's super cool. But let me just quickly hunt for this Shackmat. Yes, did I say Jewel Dagger? Because that's the one it is. It is the Jewel Dagger. Yep, so stereo filtering goodness. We've got 6 HP on this one, which is both a high pass filter and low pass filter, so it can be used as kind of an end of chain, you know, mastering style, DJ style thing if you want, but also it will do the usual low pass thing, but stereo if you want. Although, probably be nicer if you had something that did, if you had separate CVs for the left and right. Do you have that on here? No, you don't, because that would get you some of that weird spatial stuff as well. That'd be nice. But anyway, do you have any stereo filters on your radar?
No, I haven't really thought about it that much as yet.
Just get that really wide, super wide, super saw at the chainsaw. That'd be really cool. But yes, apart from modular stuff, what's on the gas radar?
Well, that's it for now. It's mostly, I mean, sort of in the midst of a major gas modular attack or a modular gas attack.
Yes. No treatments are available from your local pharmacy.
No, I'm certainly in full flight now. As I say, I'm averaging one module per week, which is
the worst it gets.
I mean, I would imagine there are periods where I've bought more than one module a week, but one module a week is bad enough.
Definitely. I was treated to a VR demo before we started recording today, and I need it. So what was I using and what was I playing?
You were using the Oculus Quest Mark 1.
Mm-hmm.
I've also got the Mark 2, but I've got the Mark 1 for guests as yourself. It's convenient to have one that is uncontaminated, let's say.
Untouched for multiple days.
It's in quarantine for an extended period between users, whereas my Oculus Quest 2 is used on a daily basis. Mm. So I was really glad that you were able to experience what I've been rattling on about for the last couple of years.
It was amazing. And while I did, as I mentioned after I'd sort of finished, I did notice the resolution. You can notice the pixels, but once you get into the game, I mean, who cares? And yeah, it was really intuitive, quite easy to pick up.
You did take to it like a duck to water.
It's gaming from birth, potentially. I don't know. But yeah, it's a new avenue of games I haven't experienced before. I have played Super Hot, but I imagine that'll be even more fun in VR.
Yes, a very popular game in VR. So you said that you would most probably get one. When do you anticipate making that purchase?
I'll probably leave it for the summer.
Quite wise.
Yes, when the funds don't go so much on making my life on a bike more...
Tolerable?
Tolerable is definitely the word. You know, rain jackets and all this kind of stuff. When that's not the focus of the budget, I think the Oculus Quest. You mentioned there might be a new one vaguely around the corner.
I don't expect to see that until maybe late 2022, maybe 2023. Okay. Having said that one, the Oculus Quest 2 came out within about 18 months or so of the release of the Oculus Quest 1.
Okay.
It was in fact, it took the sort of VR scene by surprise.
Yeah.
Been very successful. Facebook most probably doesn't make much money margin on the actual headsets themselves. I would imagine it's all made on the retail of the software, and it's a relatively closed system, although they're starting to open it up.
Yeah, well, I can see why it took off so well, and for me that self-contained thing is really great too. That's why I've been enjoying playing games on the Switch so much, is because it's sofa-able. You don't have to be tied to a desk, that kind of thing. So perfect.
Yes, I mean, when they went to the inside out tracking and the untethered wireless all on board, all processing on board system, it just became so liberating. I mean, it was okay before, but having a tether running to a hulking great PC was
that's
quite
when
restrictive.
They had the, what they call it, the lighthouses for the
I mean, depending on the system. So the
HTC Vive was the other.
So the Vive, they project from the lighthouses to the headset. And with the original Oculus system, it was infrared coming from the headset being picked up by external cameras.
Right.
But all of that has been dispensed with. As I say, it's fully inside-out tracking. Mm. I mean, the system is completely self-contained, and it's just so liberating. It's how VR should be.
It was even cool just in that setup screen where you have that black and white feed of everything that's around you, and it just felt so natural.
Yeah, I mean, that's the pass-through
that's
facility,
cool.
And it allows you to orientate yourself and so forth. And I think you can set it up so the safety area that you create initially when you set the system up, you can have it either having a kind of blue neon of mesh that appears that warns you that you're getting near the periphery of the safe zone that you've created, or you can actually have some of the real world encroaching in.
So that's kind of interesting.
A window opens up through the password. It's only black and white, and it's quite grainy, but you know, you can orientate yourself.
It should be noticeable enough in game to you know, worn without completely ruining the immersion, I suppose.
Well, I can't wait until you get a headset. Then we can hook up in cyberspace.
We'll have to attempt. Well, how could we? Could probably try and do a weird special podcast, half in VR. Stick
notable
on YouTube.
Podcasters have attempted it, yes.
What kind of thing do they do?
Well, there's a program. There's several programs. There's one particular one that allows you to share video. And you can be in various different environments, and it could be a sort of conventional cinema type environment, and you actually have your friends' avatars in the same same environment as you are. And I think that's the one they utilize. But there are quite a lot of social bits and pieces that you can get. One of the most popular ones currently is VR chat.
Yeah, that's the only one I'm aware of.
I mean, you could certainly use that. I mean, it'd be interesting. I mean, there's going to be
like public sort of rooms or something, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they might have extended the facility to have your own personal area. There's certainly, which hasn't been released yet, Facebook Horizon, which is their attempt to build the...
what's it called? The Oasis.
The Oasis. That was threatened for... this year, or in fact, was it last year? I've lost all track of time with the, with the pandemic, but I think it was actually last year. It was in theory going to be released, and sort of elements have come out, but the actual full Horizon, it's available in beta, and it's only available to invitees.
Yeah. You said you were kind of vaguely angling for an invite.
I did try for an invite, and I neglected to say that I was actually involved in a podcast, which I think would have influenced it, because they initially prefer people with reach.
To shout about it.
Sort of evangelist for the hardware and the software products.
Definitely. Before we just keep nattering about VR for the rest of time, let's go for a weekly update on my side, because things have actually happened. I've been digging into Blender, which I definitely mentioned on the podcast before, though I wasn't getting consistent stuff done. It's such a huge program that you've got to really dig into a bunch of tutorials, and it'll probably be quite a while before you can use it in a useful capacity. I've done 3/4, I think, potentially, of the classic donut tutorial, version 2, from Blender guru Andrew Price on YouTube. Really great stuff. I've got my donut with my procedural sprinkles, done a coffee cup and things like that. I've also done a few that's quite hard to do when you're still a novice like I am, but the lazy tutorials I've mentioned before by Ian Hubert on YouTube. They're harder to follow because they're so fast and quite advanced, but I have managed to do a few nuggets from that, and I did manage to make my first small animation just completely from scratch from what I have learned. So that was a really cool step. I've made a little folder on Google Drive, you know, progression through using the program, and it's been fun. I'm actually getting into it, so I've got sort of doing month by month. So last month I had 3 little renders in the folder. This month I'm up to 4. I'm pleased. It's going well, and I will update when I've actually managed to do something interesting of any capacity. Another thing, listeners, if your name is Emily and you are my sister, please stop listening to the podcast now. I bought my sister a birthday present, early birthday present, and yes, it's quite fun. I've spoken before about my appreciation of all things analog and tactile, and she is in publishing. That's her job, and she's a big writing nerd, and the great literary works, Shakespeare, English, stuff like that. So I've bought her a typewriter, and it's really fun. I got it early so that if there was anything wrong with it, I could potentially troubleshoot before it was time. It is an Olympia Traveller Deluxe S. So I've got a new ribbon for it, and it's all working. But it's really interesting to see features that you'd expect on Word and whatever processor you use nowadays in mechanical switches. So there's sort of the line spacing switch for single, double, or triple space, sort of the tab functionalities and shift, actually mechanically moving stuff. It's really fun. It's very loud and impractical, but yeah, I need to sample it before it goes to her as well. Get some nice noises out of it for use at some point, probably. But yes, typewriter has been fun. If your name is Emily, you can resume listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you. Anyway, so that's been fun. I got that off eBay for basically no money. I think that's it for the old weekly bits. It is time for the news. We mentioned this one briefly, and I basically didn't know much about it, but the Moskva 2 from Chaos Devices is a rotary 8-step sequencer, so it spins around in a circle, and it's kind of pretty. It's going for live sequencing, that kind of workflow. I know they're influenced by lots of vintage designs, all the classics. You've got a CV sequencer and a gate or trigger sequencer kind of running at the same time, and you've got your single pair of outputs, but you can obviously use them separately if you want to do some slightly weirder stuff. You've got built-in quantizer, slew limiter if you want some glide and things. But the clocking is where it gets kind of interesting, is every step can be, well, you've got 256 steps in total for you to divide between your eight steps of the sequencer, so you can have interesting timings and patterns and such like. So 20 HP, not deep, so SCIF friendly. There's the expander for CV control, should you so want. But yeah, it's a classic. And you mentioned it was for their 10th anniversary,
yes,
potentially.
Yes, apparently so. And it just shows you how long...
Yeah, I didn't realise they'd been around
that long. They've been going, which is quite interesting, how long the whole Eurorack thing is getting...
Yeah.
Quite mature now, I would say.
Definitely, and there's still tons of really small manufacturers, which is always great fun. And speaking of really small manufacturers, Hampshire Electronics.
Yeah, this is one I came across. I was unaware of them at all until I came across the gentleman's listing on eBay when I was doing my daily trawl of searching for analog synths and Eurorack things just to fantasy shop most of the time.
Always good fun.
And I noticed how inexpensive the modules were. And it just shows you that it is possible for a small boutique manufacturer to produce modules at quite an economic price.
Definitely. I've got the list in front of me here. 3340 based VCO at 70 Great British pounds, wave folder, £40, a dual filter. I can't remember what's this. Is this a
Salon
key design?
Than everybody. I don't think anyone's.
Pretty much. And as I said before, I'd be much happier buying something slightly more expensive than Behringer, but a million times better than Behringer.
But
yeah,
£60
on that dual filter there.
Yes.
Absolute bargain.
I assume that he possibly is hand building all this stuff, so it's quite labor intensive.
I believe so. And I emailed him, well, I messaged him on eBay. He is redesigning them in smaller form factors, but for the same price. So if you're a little bit pushed for space, you've got that as well, and it'll be the same circuit, just smaller.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really exotic. They're all pretty straightforward modules.
The meat and potatoes.
Yes.
Bread and butter.
Not
I don't
a
know
bad
any
place to start.
Definitely. And when I was messaging him on eBay, I was sort of mentioning about the modular CAF, and that an idea that kind of crossed our mind was to build up a well-rounded system to have just for the mod CAF, a teaching system or something to use for the jam, something that would also have a versatile clocking section to get everybody linked together. And he was very, very happy to help us out with a bit of a dealio if we ever do put one together. No, solid gent, and it's always nice to buy local.
Yeah, I thought it was certainly worth us mentioning it on here. The next thing I saw, again, I've entitled this What I Found on the Internet, but this was another one on eBay, and I believe you should have a nice colour picture.
I do, and it's
what
so...
do you think of that?
Oh, yes.
Do describe it to the listeners.
Listeners, are you sitting comfortably? What I have before me is a beautiful, custom-made, curving, lab-style rack of Eurorack synthesizers. Four rows, and it's full of Dreadbox black and white series stuff. But in the middle row on the right-hand side, we have the full Dreadbox chromatic series. We have Antidote, Hysteria, Eudaimonia, Nostalgia, Ataxia, Dystopia. I think I've repeated myself, but you've got all of them. A lovely rainbow section, and the older ones, which I think are quite popular, though a little underground, such as Gamma, Epsilon, Omicron, Lambda, Alpha, Theta, Delta, those ones. I think there's some pretty cool, weird percussion-y bits in there. But down the bottom, we've got two synths that I wish I had bought when they weren't limited edition, namely the little Erebus, small DIY Erebus, and, still kicking myself for not buying it, the Antiphon, which is a bunch of sine wave oscillators and or filter banks with a spring reverb-y type something. Really cool. The poor man's spectral multiband resonator in some ways. Oh, and it's got the Hades down the bottom as well. I forgot about
yes. that. Yes. And all for the price of £3,999.39.
Case included?
Yes, it's the whole system. It is still currently listed on eBay UK.
I would have that over a shared system.
There
for
is
that
quite
money.
A lot of people following the
oh yeah
that particular listing, but no one's jumping in. But I just thought it was interesting that someone's focused in that
it's,
much on one
great.
Particular brand.
And what you can also see, I don't know if they're selling the other system, but is off to the left. You can see a cheeky system that's got more Dreadbox in it.
So is it obviously another system, or is it just up against a mirror?
No, because the along where the mirror line might be, they're different modules.
Oh, yeah, you're correct.
So you've got the Murmux filter down there.
It's the same size case, though, isn't it?
Looks like it. They must have made a batch or something.
Possibly, but I this particular one is impressive.
It's a great-looking system.
I'm not sure whether it's worth the money. Notably, as you've got it in colour there, it's how visually grabbing it is.
It is striking, definitely. Absence of a sequencer, but you can always add one on.
Yeah, you could use a beat step. Or a key step or something like that to trigger it. But that leads me on to discussing complete systems from individual manufacturers. The joy of that. There is something to be said for those. You know, like a complete make noise system or complete.
It's something
Pittsburgh
I've messed
system.
Around in, messed around doing on Modular Grid quite a lot. Just because, you know, it's fun.
One particular
wasting
brand.
Time. Exactly.
I mean, quite a few brands actually have a complete system. None of them are inexpensive, though. They're always quite pricey.
Unfortunately not. The one that caught my eye and is sort of hovering at the very, very far edges of my brain is the tape and microsound looping machine, I think that's what it's called, from Make Noise. That's a single row with, those modules that I can't remember. To the internet, Matron!
What's the big system that they do? Has it got a
That's
name?
The shared system, I think. That's their classic one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that Andrew Wong was saying that he thought it was the greatest synth ever.
Yeah, and people in the comments weren't happy.
It's a lovely system.
Totally. Speaking of greatest synths of all time, there is a Jupiter 8 on SoundGas at the moment for £22,000.
I saw the
get bidding.
That is a bit strong.
Yeah, I mean, the going rate is about 24, so...
Really? They've gone to that extent? They were only about a year ago, they're about 12.
Yeah, no, that's just where they are. That's going on, you know, eBay and Reverb history, 24 grand.
That is ridiculous.
Unfortunate, definitely.
I mean, they're okay, but not for 24 grand. It's that's only for a completist who's purely getting it for collecting purposes, not necessarily for usage.
Yeah, and plugins are so good. And there's that Black Corporation one around the corner that we mentioned in a previous podcast.
Which I suspect is going to be very good.
Absolutely, all their stuff is.
And according to various people, including Nick Batt from Sonic State, the Jupiter 6 is a much more preferable synth, better sounding, apparently.
Gotcha.
It came out slightly later. Those come up on occasions, and they're nowhere near that sort of cost. I mean, maybe $3,000, $3,500. 4,000 possibly. What I've said many times, the current crop of new classics, modern, not necessarily reissues, but modern versions. I mean, obviously, there's nothing particularly interesting from Roland per se, or third-party takes on these type of synths. I mean, I know that these sort of certain purists say that an original Oberheim or an original Dave Smith or something like that is, you know, there's nothing to beat it. But
always say that.
I know. Having had a lot of these synths, or several of them back in the 80s, they were okay, but they weren't necessarily as great as people make out. And there's certainly a modern equivalent that will do just as good a job.
Yeah. Okay, so the Make Noise website is being very slow, but I have mostly called it up. So it's the Morphogene. That's the chap. So Morphogene is the main one. You get a Wogglebug Maths QPass, the stereo quad something animation system. I can't remember what it stands for. And Mimeophone. So it's a 1U. It's quite a small one, but that's the one that appeals to me. It's the Shared System Plus that they have now, which is...
I mean, they're all modules I'm thinking of getting, apart from the Mimeophone that I've already got.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I'm certainly thinking of the Morphogene.
Yep.
It's a very interesting product, and a lot of people seem to rate that filter, the QPass.
Yeah, it never grabbed me from the demos, but it's certainly cool.
I'm quite getting in now that I'm in my, what I'd like to describe as my dark phase.
Yeah, with your other case.
Yeah, everything having to be black.
The shared system is more, I don't want to say conventional, but as far as Make Noise goes. So that'll be Maths, DPO, Ecophone, Herbverb, Tempi, Wogglebug, Pressure Points, Renee, and Morphogene, and a couple of other bits and pieces here and there in the case with the CV bus in the middle. That's more of your, I guess, music easel kind of avenue-ish. Very ish. But it's still, I am intrigued by that self-contained single instrument thought process, at least, where, you know, you are limited by what the instrument can do, and that limitation is the inspiration in a lot of cases.
Well, the Erica Synths have at least one, maybe
indeed they
two.
Do.
The Endorphins has one.
Yeah, the Shuttle System, that's a cool one.
Still very pricey.
Yeah, it's $2,000 or $3,000, I think, the Endorphins one.
Yeah, it's certainly in excess of, slightly in excess of $2,000.
Yes, actually there's quite a few different, whoa, there's a lot of Erica synth systems actually. Let's dig into them, shall we? There is the Dada Noise System 2. So that's going to be your abstract weirdness. Fusion System, which is a bunch of the tube or valve-based modules. Descliner Fusion, which is the smaller version of the Fusion System 2. Black System 3, Quadraphonic Surround Panner. Black System 2, Pico System 3, Techno System, Pico System 2, and Black Polyvox System, which are all on their website all at the same time. Which is interesting that they're offering, you know, Pico System 2 alongside 3. Maybe they've just got old stock or something. I want to have a look at this Quadraphonic Surround Panner. This sounds interesting. Let me have a look. How are they doing their quad stuff? Do they have the joystick involved? Ah, it is the quad panning section integrated with that noise system as well. Let's see what we've got in here. So, VCO, Fusion Fusion Modulator, Black Stereo Delay, Black Joystick, times two, in fact, Dual VCF, Clock, Black Code Source. Actually, no, there are three joysticks on this system. An output module that's only stereo, Spring Reverb. Not sure they've thought this through. Anyway, it was a cool idea. Quadraphonic stuff. Who else?
Pittsburgh normally have something.
Ooh, one that I really liked the look of, if it wasn't nearly a grand, was the Voltage Research Lab, which was the Black Voltage Lab, I think was the name of the module, but they're sort of standalone, like the SV1, with a touch controller and other bits, but in that really nice wooden end cheek, you know, slanted lab equipment looking style that I like so much.
But it's certainly a way in for those who've got the cash to hand. You can just jump in and you've got a ready-made system.
Yeah, I mean, well, looking at the prices for these, if you've just sold a pretty beefy polysynth, then you're probably most of the way there already. For example, on the Erica Synths front, these are in euros, but the Fusion System 2 is 2030. The small one is 1600. 1820 is the starting price at that quad panning one. Their sort of flagship, the Black System 3, is 3800. Maybe sell a couple of polysynths and then you'll be there. But it is, if you're not the kind of person to jump in and do all the endless research and modular grid and figure it out for yourself, they're definitely a good way to go, because you can always sell and bits and pieces. You always see people on the sort of the Facebook groups and things trying to sell a full system, and it rarely works because most people just work in modules.
On a slightly different tangent, go to the other extreme of massive multi-manufacturing systems. Have you seen the latest video from Colin Bender where he's
I haven't watched it.
The culmination of his redesign of his system?
I definitely need to watch it, but all I saw was just kind of the quick pan round the whole thing. And it's, I think I saw a headline, you know, 374 modules or something like that. And, you know, three of those being metropolises, and
there's a few quid there. A few pounds.
A few bob. Big custom case and all that as well. It's definitely not
a cheap
one.
More than one case. They seem to be sort of, it looks like aluminium.
Yep, they're segments,
and
I think.
It's seven rows, but in total, I have no idea how many HP the whole thing is.
I wonder if he bothered to put it on modular grid. He'd have to pay somebody to do that. It would take ages.
Yeah, so I watched the video for his rationale. So he wasn't going in too much depth per module, but just explaining the layout of how he's got it organized and his thought process in that respect.
Okay. I'm just glancing over it since we've got it here, just what we can spot. He's still got his plenty of Macbeth stuff along the top. So there's VCOs and filters in there. We've got on his top left, it looks like he's got maybe four or five sets of the dope for polyphonic stuff, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a substantial amount, but I can't remember what he said, but it was in excess of eight.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, this is only on the left-hand side. He's got the Audiophile Circuits League Sinfonion, which is a really cool sequencer, quantizer, doohickey. There's a couple of Metropoli over here. Got some AJH Minimoog style stuff. There's a Magneto in there. There's a big chunk of orthogonal devices in the middle for sequencing and processing. The old ZDSP is one I can clearly see in there.
There's quite a sprinkling of Schwaemann stuff throughout the whole system as well.
Oh, of course, yeah, I can see the classic eggshell in there. Eloquence, the Erica Triggery Sequency Boy. There's a few bits of Verbos on the top right. That's all that's jumping out to me, really, because obviously I can't identify everything. But one thing that's really cool is I think there's three I think that might be it. But Bird Kid's like custom controllers that he had sort of commissioned. I don't know how he uses them because I haven't kept up with the videos.
Well, he was something to do with the design of that particular product, he was saying.
Oh, what? Some like the little monosynths that they made? Or
the controller.
Yeah, well, I think he had them custom made kind of for him pretty much.
Yes.
Which is super cool. But yeah, I actually really like the music he makes with it as well. So you can't even be mad. cases.
How he gets his funding.
I don't know. Because he was a pretty successful composer in some regard, but I don't really know anything
else. So maybe
else.
He has revenue streams there and it's just the modular thing is just an obsession on the side.
Yeah. So each of these cases is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rows. And they're definitely over 104 HP. Wide, I'd guess at 140 or something. That's going to be my guess.
Times.
Here we go. Let me do that. So let's call it 145 ish, and then that'll be times
4.
Well, 7 and then 4. So that'll be 2030 ish HP of modular goodness. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that. Well, I know there's people with way more modulars.
Definitely worth a watch if you're really seriously into your modular, because he's using it. Anyway, sidetracked from the one manufacturer system section, I have definitely seen in the comments of Colin Bender's videos that people do describe it as looking like the cockpit of a spaceship. You know who else is sitting in the cockpit of a spaceship right now? It's Luke doing his
Luke Spacey bit.
And that segue kind of worked. Luke, please navigate us through.
Hello, space fans, and welcome to our segment. It's been another busy week, so we'll jump right in. SpaceX has launched a fifth new GPS satellite into orbit on the 17th of June. This is part of an effort by the US military and contractors to launch 10 redesigned GPS satellites to modernize the existing 31-strong constellation, the oldest of which date back to the late 90s. It is expected that the new GPS 3 series will increase accuracy threefold. They are also compatible with the global navigation satellite systems like Europe's Galileo satellite and will therefore supplement civil user connectivity as well as military needs. You can watch the coverage of SpaceX's Falcon 9 launching the satellite and then landing safely on the Just Read the Instructions drone ship shortly thereafter. The CNSA have also been busy. The Shenzhou 12 mission docked with the new Tianhe space station also on the 17th. This marked the first crewed mission by China for 5 years and will be the longest that they've ever attempted. The three astronauts led by Major General Nie Shang are tasked with opening the new space station for business, performing construction and testing it for human habitation and beginning its operational lifetime over a period of 3 months before returning to Earth and potentially handing over to a new crew. The goal of the Tianhe station is to provide a permanent orbital laboratory for China for at least the next 10 years. Videos of the docking can be seen on YouTube and various other places. NASA have finally completed assembly of the first SLS core stage. Previously on the show, we discussed the static fire tests of the four RS-25 former space shuttle engines that will power the new space launch system. The new heavy lift vehicle now rests between its two solid fuel boosters inside the vehicle assembly building at the Kennedy Space Center. It's now awaiting the upper stage and Orion capsule, which it will launch into orbit around the moon. This is in anticipation of the first Artemis mission, which will seek to test the SLS and Orion capsule in an uncrewed flight this November. If all goes well, this will help NASA to achieve their goal of a follow-up crewed mission to lunar orbit, dubbed Artemis 2, in 2023. This is all in preparation for their eventual lunar landing mission, which is slated for 2024, possibly using the Starship HLS variant as a landing vehicle. Exactly how NASA will utilize the SLS, Orion capsule, Starship, human landing system, this all remains to be seen, but we are excited to see how it shakes out. Talking of the moon, we have the first of two important anniversaries this week. First is the launch of the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter on the 18th of June 2009. The craft entered lunar orbit 5 days after, where it began adjusting its orbit to suit the needs of its main mission, which will begin on the 15th of September the same year. The LRO has been recording the moon's surface in detail and to date has mapped over 92% of the surface, providing us with the most accurate topographical map we've ever had of our planetary neighbour. The LRO has been useful in cooperating with other space agencies and has imaged landing sites of other craft sent to the moon by agencies like the CNSA and the ISRO of India. The overall goal of missions like the LRO is to provide and highlight images of safe landing sites, resource-rich locations, or areas of interest for future landings, something that will hopefully come into play in the near future. On the 16th of June 1963, Valentina Tereshkova became the first and only woman of Earth to fly a solo crewed mission into space. Her flight on Vostok 6 launched 2 days after Vostok 5, meaning Valentina and her colleague Valery Bykovsky shared a trip into orbit. The cosmonauts were able to remain in radio contact throughout their shared time in orbit, though it is not certain if they could ever see each other through the Vostok viewing windows across the Gulf of Space, as they were separated by an angle of about 30 degrees at all times, meaning the distance between them was rather vast. Both missions served to further the understanding of the effects of spaceflight on the human body, and after a flight time of 2 days and 22 hours, Tereshkova returned to Earth via parachute, ejecting from the Vostok spacecraft as per the design. In true Soviet style, Valentina Tereshkova landed among farmers in the Altai Krai region, where she was treated to dinner before returning to Moscow. There are other great anniversaries to remember this week, such as the launch of Mariner 5 to Venus in 1967. The launch of Challenger STS-7 in 1983, which carried Sally Ride, the first female astronaut, into orbit, along with several satellites, and the launch of the V-2 rocket in 1944, reaching 176 kilometers into the air, crossing the Kármán line and becoming the first man-made object to enter space, though it did not and was not designed to achieve orbital velocity, so it crashed back down to Earth at the completion of its test run. This is to say nothing of the awful history of the V-2 rockets, but at least in its later years it was turned to the development of space travel rather than the destruction of human life. That's all we have time for today, but if I was to tie in a recommendation for our space enthusiasts, then it would have to be an incredibly special mention to a game that I've poured hours of my life into, and that is Kerbal Space Program. Don't let its relatively simple graphics fool you. KSP is an excellent spaceflight and engineering simulator, allowing you to build, test, and fly rockets into a fully physical, though slightly smaller scale, solar system. KSP is loved by its fans and can be modded to within an inch of its life into an entirely different experience with some care and attention. I'd personally recommend the CCAN Manager and the Near Future Propulsion suite of mods. At the time of recording, the base game is currently available at a stupendous discount with some online retailers, so if you have an interest in rocketry and the patience to watch your creations sputter, combust, drift off uncontactable into the dark, or otherwise fail tragically before achieving their goals, then I would recommend you play it. The second game in the series by Intercept Games promises more of the same, but with modern graphics and a far more sophisticated engineering focus. It is due to release in early 2022 with assistance from indie developer Squad, who developed the original. That's it from us, but join us next week for more space news, and in the meantime, stay safe, bye-bye.
And thank you once again, Captain Luke, for taking us safely through that asteroid field of spacey stuff. That means we're at the end of episode 77. It's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendations. Of course. Pete, I've forgotten what mine is. Do you want to go first?
No problem.
Excellent.
As usual, I reach into the dark depths of my endless YouTube subscription list.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's quite most probably known by a lot of people. It's a derivative of the Vice News channel,
mm-hmm.
and it is the channel Motherboard.
Oh, I might have accidentally strayed across one of those once.
So Motherboard is their technology channel, let's mm-hmm. say. So they described it as, the future is wonderful, the future is terrifying, we should know we live there. Whether on the ground or on the web, Motherboard travels the world to uncover the tech and science stories that define what's coming next for this quickly evolving planet of ours. So just...
nothing insignificant in there.
No, and they just do everything from quite serious sort of science-y sort of stuff, and then they're more, well, I wouldn't say it's philosophical, but they'll touch on the sort of UFO type thing, mm-hmm. which is very current at the moment with all the sort of chat and sort of pseudo-excitement
yep.
from the report that will be released at some point this month.
Mm-hmm. They're by the basically Pentagon. Releasing, what, everything?
Well,
supposedly.
Allegedly, but some of it still might be redacted and covered up. But they're just going to... I don't know if it's going to be a bit of an anticlimax, really. Mm. It's already been leaked to a degree, and it's a bit of a sort of damp firework type of thing. I would imagine if there's anything really juicy, they're still not going to talk about it.
Keeping it to themselves.
Keeping them to themselves. Because it's generally regarded as a national security issue, because the fear is that it's not necessarily alien technology. It's technology owned by some other, which could be, technically, it could be a foe. Mm. Well, it could be a foe anyway, but technically it could be another nation, a competitor. Yeah. That is the initial concern. But their statement is that there is this technology. They have no way of corroborating whether it's alien or not. Mm. And they can only state that it's not theirs.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's as far as it goes. But, I mean, like a lot of people, I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily cynical. I certainly believe that the universe is so large, there's got to be other intelligent life out there.
Absolutely.
Most current scientific thinking surmises that's the case. Whether they're here, or they've arrived here, or they can travel here, is a totally different scenario.
Yeah.
But now that we're having this witness testimony from quite serious military types, and also the evidence, the weapons targeting system evidence, and the quite heavily corroborated first-hand witness testimony from several military personnel. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was a 60 Minutes interview, I want to say last week or the week before.
Yeah.
It might have been older, where you had Lieutenant Favor, who's the
chap who was on the Joe Rogan.
Yes, that
podcast.
Gentleman. But also a female, I'm not sure if she was a pilot or a weapons operator stroke navigator in one of the other planes, who also witnessed it at the same time, both on the program discussing it.
And these are the Tic Tacs in that particular one.
I can't believe that people that have had a long and illustrious or successful military career and of that senior rank are going to lower themselves to
tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists level.
Yes, and to go on to national TV and state it. So it's definitely a thing, but I believe the report that when it is released, or the leaks of the report that have already come out, don't really confirm or deny anything. There's nothing really. It's just more of a shrug of the shoulders. Yes, we've seen this. We don't know what it is. There's no epiphany that we're all going to have. But it's interesting. It diverts everyone's attention from the pandemic. It's something else to think about.
Anyway, you can find that kind of thing on Motherboard, you say, on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, again, the majority of the content is scientific in nature and is well worth a watch. The channel is simply titled Motherboard.
Lovely stuff. Well, I have a music recommendation for you this week. Once again, I don't have the broadest taste. Unfortunately, we need Telmo for that. He's the encyclopedic brain for musical things. If you're in the progressive corner, that is prog rock, prog metal, prog anything, but this will be in the definitely the prog metal kind of corner. This is a band from, I think, Holland, called Vola, V-O-L-A. They released a new album a bit ago this year. I pre-ordered the vinyl. It was very exciting. I think it glows in the dark, though I haven't tested it. It's called Witness, and it's massive. It's, if you like your metal, but you don't like it screamy, you'll be safe here. Melodic vocals, some really big choruses, synthy parts, there's some quieter ones, lots of big riffs, but some great songs. The singles were Straight Lines and Head Mounted Sideways, which are kind of the chubbier riffs. But 24 Light Years and Freak are two excellent quieter tunes, but some really well put together music. That is the album Witness by Vola. And thank you for listening all the way to the end of Rack Addicts After Hours episode 77. We thank you, as always, for tuning in, and we hope you do so again next week. Bye-bye.